getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about what happens to your business or any business in divorce. I'm going to guess that close to about half the couples that I work with, one spouse has their own business. There's a huge variety. I've seen blogs that are strictly a side job that probably costs more to run than they do to than they make. I've seen an Etsy site bringing in close to 100 grand a year, a consulting business with no employees, no assets, but great revenue, a well-established construction business, a medical practice, a tree service company. You know, so it's a huge variety. Now, when the business isn't making any money, people do often agree to ignore it. But if there's any significant revenue or investment in there, there's always a discussion about how it should be valued or how it should be divided. And that gets tricky because a quick Google search will tell you that valuing a business is not black and white. Ask three different professionals to value a business and they might each give you three different answers. So what are you supposed to do? Well, today we're going to dig into this question. And joining me is divorce advisor, attorney, mediator, and coach Karen Covey. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I'm so glad you could join us again today.
My pleasure.
So I touched on this in my opening, but I thought we could talk a little bit to start with, like, are we talking about all businesses here? Is there any situation that can be ignored, or is it more just that some businesses are so small that they can be counted as being not material?
Well, when it comes to the area of, you know, dividing a business or deciding whether to divide a business in divorce, the first thing that everyone has to realize is that it is complicated. It is so very, very complicated. And if you have anything of, you know, any, if your business is of any valuable size at all, you're going to be really wise to consult not only with an attorney, but with a financial advisor. And that having been said, the easiest way to think of it is, first, you have to decide if one partner or the other or both have businesses, are they marital businesses or are they not marital businesses? Because if it's a business that you walked into when you were already married, then at least a piece of that business, if not all of the business, may be non-marital property. And if it's one spouse's non-marital property, then typically it doesn't get divided in a divorce.
Okay. All right. So that might be the first step is deciding if it's a marital asset.
Right. And the business, you know, the other thing that you've got to preliminarily decide or understand is that a business is two things. A business is an asset that is it's worth something on the open market. And it's also a way to produce income. So it's an asset and income. So the first thing you have to decide is, okay, understand that this business is an asset. Is it a marital asset? And if it was something, you know, that's a subject I could go on, you know, for an hour just talking about that and all the nuances that are there. But the basic rule is if somebody created the business during the marriage, it's a marital asset.
So even if I worked on my business my own, my spouse did absolutely nothing, wasn't involved in the business at all, didn't do any bookkeeping, didn't do any marketing. I did it all myself, did all the sales, so I do all the consulting, I generate all the revenue. If I started it after we were married, it's still considered a marital asset.
Yes.
I think that people struggle with that.
I know, because, you know, somehow, and I can say this as someone who owns my own business, and I've had my own business for years and years, and there's something about that that seems so inherently unfair. You know, you did all the work, you put in all the blood, sweat, and tears. It's your baby in a lot of ways, but it's still a marital asset, and very much so. And the way to think of it is, if you weren't working on the business, if you were going to a day job, the money that you would make at your day job while you're married is marital. It's marital income. So the business you're working on, you know, especially at first, it may not be making you any money, but you're building an asset. You're creating something. And if you did it during the course of the marriage, it's marital.
So all that sweat at equity, if it's your business, is marital asset.
Yep.
Wow. I know that's yes. And you said it's your baby. It's really hard to get around, I think, for a lot of people to think that it shouldn't be a marital asset. But before we move off that topic of marital asset or not, I mean, what happens then if you have a partner?
You mean a partner in the business?
Yes. Sorry.
Okay.
I didn't mean
that's
a spouse.
Okay.
I meant like somebody who was worked in the business with you and maybe had put in capital as well, or, you know, shared in the expense of the startup.
Well, this is a perfect example of why, if you are going to start a business with anybody else besides just yourself, you really need to be clear about who's doing what, what are the ownership. You know, how are you going to share ownership? How are you going to divide responsibilities and all that sort of thing? And hopefully, in a perfect world, you put that down in writing. If you had a partnership, you had a partnership agreement. If you made a corporation, you had, you know, you did corporate documents that set out what the rules were and who owns how much. But let's just say that you've got whatever the legal form of the business, you've got a partner. Well, what that means is you don't own 100% of the business. Presumably your partner owns half, right? So what's a marital asset then is half of the value of the business, not all of it, because you only have.
Okay. All right. So I can understand that. So now that we've established that there's a business and it has some value that needs to be discussed, where do you start determining how to value that? I mean, it's my understanding that some of these business valuations can run 10 to 15,000. So it seems like
easily
you have to decide if there's enough in the business to if you and your spouse want to spend that much valuing the business.
Exactly. So what you need to look at as a starting place, I mean, first of all, you have to sit down and decide, is your spouse reasonable, right? Because if they're and that's a big one, because you might be married to someone who thinks, oh my gosh, you've been doing this Etsy business for 5 years now, and it must be worth $1 million because you bring in, you know, $5,000 worth of revenue every month. But what they don't understand is that, you know, you may have a lot of costs involved in the business. It's
right.
Not, you know, you've got the inventory and the raw materials that you use and blah, blah, blah. So even though you bring in $5,000 a month, really your profit is only $1,000 a month. So they think the business is worth a huge amount, and in reality, maybe not so much. So you've got to decide if the business has a value and if that value is worth, you know, putting a number on. And if you and your spouse agree, for what, you know, whatever the economics of it are, you say, okay, we're not going to value this because both of us agree that it has little to no value, or it's valued at $5,000 or less, it doesn't make sense, perfect, you're good. The problems come in when, you know, your spouse thinks that, you know, he wants to value your business or she wants to value your business, or you want to value their business, right? So that's when there's a problem. And realistically, a business valuation, like you said, is going to start at $5,000 and go up from there. So if you've got a business that the whole value is, you know, it's a business that's created by one person, it's run by one person, that person generates all of the revenue, and there's no hard assets in the business, like they don't have trucks and equipment and that sort of thing, you could spend easily $10,000 to value something that's got no value or got very little value. So the first step after you decide, you know, after you figure whether it's a marital asset, is to say, is this worth valuing? And hopefully you and your spouse will be reasonable about that.
So when you are talking about, is it worth valuing, is it helpful to think about, well, would somebody else buy this?
Yes, the value of any business, and there are a lot of different ways to value businesses, and that can get really complicated. But what you need to think about when you're, no matter what approach you take, the value is what a willing buyer would pay to a willing seller on the open market for the business.
Right. So I was just thinking about, you know, somebody who in the example you were talking about that has doesn't have any assets, but has, generates a lot of revenue, that business could be the value of that. Part of the attraction there would be the book of client accounts.
And correct.
So could somebody buy that? If they were doing a web development business, for example, then would somebody be interested in buying that because of the value of those established client accounts?
Possibly. And what you, first of all, what you've got to look at is, can this business be bought? Because there are certain, like, professional practices that you can't buy and sell your clients, right? If that's all you have in the business,
yeah.
Can't be bought or sold, right?
Right.
But let's say it's a web designer. Okay, so it's a single person who's a, you know, one-person business who's a web designer. Could that person sell their business? Well, yeah, of course they could. You know, and if somebody bought it, could they buy their book of business? Yes, absolutely. But if that person doesn't have an identifiable brand that will follow the business and not them, well then, you know, if I'm the web developer and I sell my business to you, for example, because you want to buy my business, and then I leave and all the clients leave too, you've bought nothing. So what you're talking about in terms of, you know, valuing a business is, you know, it depends on what's involved in the business, and all of that affects the value. Is it just one person doing all the work, and if that person leaves, the business is pretty much dissolved? Well, that seriously affects then the ultimate value of that business.
Okay. And
because nobody's going to want to buy. You've got to think about the definition, a willing buyer and a willing seller. Nobody's going to want to buy a business that goes down the tubes, you know, after they buy it because the original owner leaves.
Right, right. Would it help you to look at the business tax returns? I'm going to guess, you know, maybe if you're not familiar with tax returns, balance sheets and like profit and loss statements, you're going to need a CPA to help you to really understand about the business.
Exactly. And, you know, if you are very business savvy yourself, and you're comfortable, you know, with financial reports and cash flow statements and profit and loss and balance sheets and all those kinds of things, and you understand the numbers when you're looking at them, then, yeah, maybe you can, you know, maybe you can do this yourself. But I would suggest that for most people, even if they can do it for themselves, when you're going through a divorce, it is so emotional. You are not objective. You're not thinking clearly. It's always good to have a financial professional look at those statements and say, what does it look like, you know, what does it look like is going on here? How much money is this business really bringing in? What kind of assets do they have on the balance sheet? Is this company worth anything independently of its owner? And the answer could be yes, like you mentioned, a construction company. Obviously, if the company stopped doing business today, they've got equipment they could sell. They've got, you know, they've probably got a lot of machinery, equipment, maybe accounts receivable, jobs they haven't, you know, that they've done the work, they haven't been paid yet. They may have inventory that they're using to work on the different construction projects. So that's, you know, that's one thing. They have a lot of assets in the business. Other businesses, not so much.
Right, right. Karen, I have got lots more questions, but we're going to take a quick break here. Listeners, I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce. And today we're talking about what happens to your business or your spouse's business in divorce. My guest today is Chicago-based divorce advisor, attorney, mediator, and coach Karen Covey. And Karen, you have a free divorce toolkit to share with our listeners.
Yes, I do. If you go to my website at karencovey.com, that's karencovy.com, you can get access to a free divorce toolkit. It includes checklists and worksheets that you can use in, you know, anyone can use in their own divorce to help them understand what's going on and get themselves organized and move forward to get a better result.
That's a great resource that you have on your website, Karen.
Thank you. I've tried to make it as helpful as I could for as many people as possible.
Well, I'm a list person. I'm always making lists, so I would appreciate that. So let me ask you another question. Something that I often run into with people who have their own businesses is it seems like there aren't always clear-cut lines between personal expenses and business expenses. And so, you know, and some of it is, you know, the both parties, both spouses know what's going on and has been for years. And that's, you know, they've kind of tacitly agreed to that's how the business is going to run. And then other times it's a suspicion that so-and-so, that he's putting more through, you know, he's getting paid cash under the table, the business, you know, it's not reflecting in the business. So, what happens in those two situations? Is this a wake-up call or for people who have their own businesses to kind of get the accounting side of the house in order?
Well, yes, absolutely. Hopefully it will have been in order, but let's be realistic. I mean, a lot of people, small businesses, they don't do things 100% by the book because they're too busy, that, you know, keeping the records isn't their thing, whatever it is. So this kind of thing happens all the time. But what you have to understand, there's a lot of different situations. I mean, you mentioned the tax returns of the business, and that's going to be key. Well, if both parties have been sort of tacitly agreeing that certain expenses that weren't necessarily clearly business expenses got paid by the business, you're going to have a hard time once you're divorced or you're going through a divorce saying, well, those shouldn't be paid by the business. They've always been paid by the business before, but now they shouldn't be. Because realistically, if the business didn't have such high expenses, it would be making more money and therefore would probably be valued at more money. So, you know, you've got to look at the history to say, you know, what has the business done in the past? And sometimes if both spouses, you know, went along with it and said, okay, you know, we're going to do, this is how this business is going to be run, and this is what's going to be paid from it and what's not, you're going to be hard-pressed at the end, or you could be, to say, oh, no, that was wrong, and I knew it, but I didn't say anything at the time. I mean, you should have said something if you didn't agree at the time.
Right. So, that, you know, a question I should have asked you earlier is, you know, what happens if the business hasn't been set up as its own legal separate entity? Like, you know, somebody's got a consulting business or they're a freelance writer and they, you know, it's not an LLC, it's not a partnership, not a corporation, not anything like that. They're just, you know, handling it themselves. Does that make a difference to this conversation?
Yes and no. I mean, hopefully, even if they, I have to answer like a lawyer, I can't help it. It's been drilled into me. But hopefully, no matter, even if you're just a person and you have your own business, I would hope that you took the time to create a separate bank account and to run business expenses and income through that separate bank account so that everything isn't one big muddle in your checkbook, right? But if you didn't do that, then valuing that business becomes that much more difficult than that much more expensive because, you know, you're going to have to hire an accountant literally to go through every single bank statement and say, okay, which expenses were business expenses, which income was business income, which income was from some other source. I mean, it's going to be a nightmare. And hopefully no one does that or, you know, if you are doing it, you know, 2018 is just around the corner. You won't be doing it for long. You'll decide to change your ways because the other thing it makes it very difficult to do is tax returns because the IRS has to know what's business income, what's not business income, right? And that's how you figure out your income for tax purposes. So hopefully you at least kept things separate. If you did, it should be kind of clear, Although I will tell you this, it's never 100% clear. And I always tell my clients when they come in and they say, my spouse has his or her own business, the truth of the matter is the one place or one of the best places that you can hide money is if you have your own business.
Right, right.
So if your spouse has a business and you're saying, should I get it valued or are they hiding money from me? I have to tell you, if they are so inclined, that's probably one of the easiest ways to do it, because suddenly, you see this in divorce all the time. One spouse has a business, it's doing perfectly fine, they decide to get divorced, and all of a sudden, business is in the gutter, right?
Right.
You know, they're not making money, or all of a sudden they have huge capital expenses, or and it's just, it's really, really difficult to separate what's real and what's not, what's business and what's personal. Where does that line, you know, in theory, from an accounting perspective, it should be quite clear, but often on a day-to-day basis, it gets muddled.
Well, that's what I've come to realize with so much about businesses in divorce, it is muddled. So there's something else I've been grappling with, Karen, and that's whether there is any overlap between dividing a business and spousal support. So let's say it's, if you have a business and it's valued, let's say quite simply it's valued at 20,000, and you agree that you're each going to take 10,000, and the person whose business it is will take that 10,000 from other assets and pay their spouse. How does that play into spousal support? Because if you've just cut the value of the business in half, then hasn't the other spouse received half of what the person's supposed to be using to help make money?
You're absolutely right. It does get tricky. And it goes back to what, it goes back to what I said in the very beginning. A business is two things. It's both property and it's income, or potentially income generating, right? So the piece of the business, let's take the construction company. So it's got assets. It's got tools and equipment and inventory. If you sold, if you folded the business and sold those have a value, right?
Right.
So that part is property. But the fact that you can use those tools and that equipment and that inventory to generate income, that's income. So the business is both. And what you're referring to is double dipping. And really, this is why I started the conversation by saying you've got to talk to a lawyer in your area, because the law, state to state, varies like crazy. The courts are all over the boards on this, and even courts in the same state can come to very different decisions based on different sets of facts. So it's not a very clear area at all. But what you're talking about is there's an element in a business valuation that's called goodwill. It's like the value of the business that goes over and above the value of the equipment and the tools and the inventory and those sorts of things, right? And for instance, if you were going to sell, if you had a brand, let's say you happen to own Kraft, right? And that brand was worth something, right? Because some people will buy a product if it's a Kraft-made product because they trust that brand, right? Well, if there's goodwill that is part of the actual business itself, that's a factor in valuing the business. But if the goodwill, if we're not talking about Kraft, if we're talking about, for example, Dr. Smith's medical practice, people will go to Dr. Smith because he's Dr. Smith and they know him and they trust him, right? But is that because of him personally, or is that because of the business, right? And that's where everything gets kind of, it gets very, very muddy, and courts will go different ways. But what they, you know, a lot of courts will say is, if you include in the valuation the value of Dr. Smith's goodwill, then you can't, that goodwill is what generates the income. So it's not fair to double dip like that and say, we're going to make you divide part of that value in your business and also as income. So what normally happens is, no matter how the courts no matter which side they come down on whether that gets included in the value or included for support. And when I say support, right now I'm just talking about spousal support,
right?
Spousal support purposes. The courts are usually trying to find some kind of balance so that they avoid the double dipping. How they do that depends on the law in their area.
Okay.
So it's very different. And this is a really complicated thing.
Because I was thinking if you valued the business based on projected earnings, projected mm-hmm. revenue, that would also, could potentially result in this double dip situation.
Right, and it could. And so that's the balance that you're trying to strike between property and income. And most of the time, that conversation centers more around the value of the business as property and spousal support. When the conversation changes to child support, courts then start looking at that a little bit differently. And sometimes that can be seem grossly unfair to the business owner because the court says, look, the children need to be supported. And they didn't get a piece of that value of the business one way or the other. So regardless of whether, you know, the court says, it'll lower spousal support or maintenance or alimony, whichever you call it in your state, we may lower that to offset the value of the business. So as between the spouses, things seem generally fair. But when it comes to the kids, income is income.
Right. Well, except when it comes to a business that you own and you can control how much income you actually pull out of the business, because then you could make your income look artificially low for the purposes of calculating child support.
And that's a whole other discussion, but you're absolutely right.
Okay. Well, let's not go down that rabbit hole. I have another area that I wanted to talk to you before we're out of time. I did say in my intro that people, if the business isn't making any money, people often agree to ignore it. But I'm thinking that they can't ignore it completely, because the other part of the businesses, and this applies regardless of the value, is about risk management. So if my business has no value, then I might still want my spouse to give me sole ownership, because I don't want my spouse coming back in 5 years' time and claiming it when I have worked hard and built up a value.
That's exactly right. So, you know, you and your spouse may say, okay, the ABC business that you've created doesn't make any money, it has no value, you get to keep that ABC business. Well, then you're divorce papers should say two things. They should say, number one, you get to keep the ABC business and all of its assets and income and whatever it has as your sole property. And B, the flip side of that is you're also responsible for all of the debts of ABC business, and you'll indemnify and hold your spouse harmless from any and all of those debts.
Right.
And if you happen to have incurred debt, like if you let's say you've got ABC Company and you opened a credit card in the name of ABC Company, right? Then that's pretty clear. That credit card belongs to the company and you're going to pay that credit card. What becomes less clear and what becomes more of a bone of contention is when you're the small business owner and you need money to open your business, so you put a $10,000 draw on your own personal credit card. And that might have happened 5 years ago, and then there's been money in, money out, you buy and everything gets mixed together. And that's when it becomes less clear, because the spouse who doesn't get to keep the business, or, you know, especially if you're talking some serious money, like every year you dump more money into the business and more money, because as we all know who are business owners, it takes a lot to start a business, and there's a lot of money that can go in up front. The other spouse says, wait a minute, I want to get reimbursed for all of that. But then the spouse who was working on the company said, yes, but all of that money is gone, and I'm still not generating a profit. There's nothing for you to get. Then that becomes the conversation about how to settle up that debt. Because it's money spent.
So that's a property settlement. So then do people write a promissory note promising committing to paying their spouse so much money in over so much period of time?
If they agree to do that, so let's say, you know, spouse A incurred the debt and says, okay, I agree to pay spouse B $10,000 to reimburse him or her for the investment in my business, and I'm going to pay them at the rate of $500 a month every month for the next 20 months, right? But it wouldn't, there may or may not be an independent promissory note, but again, it's also going to say that in your divorce judgment, it's going to say spouse A is going to pay spouse B. And the reason you want it in a court order is because court orders are mandatory. They're orders. They're not suggestions. So if one spouse, the one that's supposed to pay, doesn't, the other one can go immediately into court and say, hey, judge, they were supposed to pay me and they didn't do it. Hold them in contempt. Versus if you just have a promissory note and spouse B says, hey, wait a minute, you didn't pay me, then the lawsuit is harder, longer, and different because they have to file a lawsuit in court to say,
to prove
this person had a promissory note.
Right.
So it's extra step.
Right. And then just quickly, I do want to go back to, and we kind of skipped over it, but that release of liability, it's like, if you're the spouse that doesn't have the business, you want to be sure that nobody can come after you in the future for any sort of wrongdoing, proven or otherwise, that happened in the business while you were married.
Yes. And the other, you know, so you would want that in your divorce documents, and it should really cover any and all debts that the business incurred, including, and this can be a big one, if it's a business that had some money, had some income and filed tax returns, you want to make sure that you're also indemnified for any liability on those tax returns that you had nothing to do with as well.
All right. So that's another reason why if you have a business, you got to get some legal advice on this.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's so many. We're just touching on the tip of the iceberg here, but there's so many, I know, there's so many nuances, and it's legal and financial because there are a lot of ways. I mean, we've been talking about all the legal hazards involved in dividing up a business and divorce. There's financial hazards as well because you may not have all of the records and the books and the records that you need. You may think that you're looking at something that means one thing and it really means something entirely different. So you end up one way or another doing yourself or your spouse a disservice in the divorce, or somebody gets the short end of the stick because you didn't know what you were dealing with. So really, if you've got a business that's worth anything at all, or your spouse does, the best thing that you can do is to get the proper professional advice, and then you can make your decisions. You know, if you go to a lawyer and the lawyer says, you know, here's what you're looking at, and this is what, you know, you stand to gain $10,000, but it's going to cost you $20,000 to value the business,
right?
Then you can make your choices, and
yeah,
the financial professional the same. But, you know, forewarned is forearmed. If you've got a business, there's no reason why you wouldn't spend a couple $100 with attorneys and financial people to sort this all out on the front end rather than being sorry you didn't do that on the back end.
Well, Karen, that's excellent advice, and we're out of time, but I think that's a really, really, really important takeaway there.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us today, Karen. Listeners, we've been talking about what happens to your business in divorce with my guest, Chicago-based attorney, mediator, divorce advisor, and coach, Karen Covey. Karen has some very practical, essential checklists and guides on her website, so do check that out, karencovey.com. That's Karen, CoVy.com. And thank you again, Karen.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
So this is, and we touched on this a little bit, but all too often I see couples trying to negotiate the division of their assets before they have the whole picture and before they have all the information, and the negotiations usually get stuck and things can start to spiral downwards. So failing to assess the value of your business is a classic reason why this happens. Before you even get to the valuation discussion, you're going to need to determine and accept that your business may be a marital asset. If you're not sure about it, then get a legal consult, because it'll be worth every penny you spend on it. And then, as you've heard, business valuations are very subjective, and there's all sorts of reasons why they can be that subjective. It's like just trying to decide the basis on which to value it, as well as if there's a lot of personal expenses running through there, sort of untangling the business expenses from the personal expenses. So if that's your business, then now might be an excellent time for you to re-examine your business expenses to make sure that you're accurately accounting for your personal expenses separately. I would think that valuing the business is a bit like playing with slime. There's never going to be one number that everyone agrees on. And understanding the variances and understanding the different perspectives may help you come to a settlement. Otherwise, it's a key indicator that you're going to need some additional professional expertise to get this resolved. Thank you for listening. I'm Mandy Walker. I hope you'll join us again next time for more conversations about divorce.